Okay, welcome everyone. So we're very pleased to have Gregory White, who is joining us from the University of Melbourne, where he's a PhD student supervised by Kevin Modi, Charles Hill, and Lloyd Hollenberg. He's worked on characterization, verification, open quantum systems, sensing, sample complexity and learning of quantum states. And today we'll tell us about quantum many-time physics, noise complexity, and windows to new phenomena. Gregory, please go ahead.
Great. So thanks very much for having me, and thanks everyone for tuning in. So today I want to talk a bit about my recent research in looking at temporal quantum phenomena and some ideas I think are interesting for future directions. So just kind of roughly, I want to broadly split up this talk into three sections. One, to give a bit of context to the work, then introduce some of our results and some of the focus of my last few years of the PhD. And then to talk about some future directions. Cool. So I think the kind of foundational motivation for what I want to talk about today is the observation that quantum mechanics has a space-time structure. And I think this is sort of a statement which is at the same time a little bit non-trivial and a little bit obvious. Non-trivial in the sense that we typically regard non-relativistic laws as treating time as being a parameter through which evolution is governed and space as being something which is a little bit more important, but maybe obvious in the sense that if you were to show a circuit like this to a quantum computing or a quantum information student, they'd pretty quickly be able to grasp that the concept that there might be some joint correlation between output statistics between, say, this measurement on this qubit and this measurement on this qubit at a different time. And so the way that if you want to try to be precise about elevating time to the same standing as space in a quantum sense, then one way to go about this is to associate a Hilbert space with a number of times. And then the general idea, and I'll unpack this in a little bit, is that you stitch together, you have a quantum state which goes through an evolution, and it passes through a series of measurement apparatuses or passes through a series of control operations. And these control operations are what sort of stitch together the state from time to time. And I think this is a fairly natural way to sort of think about understanding dynamics, particularly for quantum mechanics, because our measurements are invasive, because, you know, a state of knowledge about what's going on dynamically necessarily has to incorporate some kind of user interface. It has to incorporate some understanding of how our control operations, our extraction of information, is affecting that dynamics. And so this kind of formalism, or this way of looking at things, is broadly covered in a variety of contexts, which you may or may not be familiar with, things like quantum combs, process matrices, process tensors, superdensity operators, operator tensors, and I'm sure a bunch more that I'm missing. But I think kind of the most elementary or the most comprehensible example of this is just with the regular Choi-Jamakovsky isomorphism. So if you're not familiar with this, this is essentially the statement in its canonical form that if you pass one half of a maximally entangled state through a quantum map, so some evolution of some sort, then the resulting bipartite state can be identified element by element with this mapping. And so you can associate one half of the state with the output states at time t1 and one half with the input states at time t0. And so this kind of gives a sense of the sort of broad structures that you can have in treating quantum mechanics in this sort of discretized sense. And these structures are, I think, they're relevant across a whole range of different fields which are tangential to or orthogonal to quantum information. But what I want to talk about in particular today is the emergence of these structures in open quantum systems. So in an open quantum system, what you can have, or what you typically have, is you have a system which you're interested in coupled to a possibly complex environment. And that coupling can generate the exchange of information. And so if the environment is able to distribute information back to the system at a variety of different points in time, then the system itself can be correlated with itself across those different points in time. And so this is kind of a nice, interesting testbed to think about the emergence of these structures, both in an academic sense and in a very practical setting. So for example, just with the emergence of quantum technology and quantum devices in general, this is a very pertinent question. but has broad applications for things like thermodynamics, for things like condensed matter physics, and so on. So what I'm particularly interested in is the exploration of these sorts of temporal structures and the use of near-term quantum devices and near-term quantum computers to kind of explore this. So the results I'll present today are predominantly in the context of noise and quantum computers, but these structures are very kind of generalizable and very relevant to a whole bunch of different areas. So in particular, we want to explore the questions, you know, what generates these sorts of spatiotemporal correlations? How can they be structured? And in particular, how can we access, measure, and manipulate them? So to do this, I want to employ a mathematical framework known as a process tensor, and this is similar to all these other ones that I just mentioned, but it discusses particularly, or it generalizes particularly to non-Markovian open quantum processes. So the picture we're dealing with here is that you have an accessible system, a system that you can control, and this is broadly speaking coupled to some inaccessible environment via a series of system environment unitaries. And you can imagine that at a bunch of different points in time that you drive the system. So you perform some control operation on it. And at the end of the dynamics, you obtain some state which is conditioned on whatever that sequence of operations is. And so you can rearrange this sort of open setting to a mapping. And this is exactly what the process sensor is, maybe in a more opaque sense. It's a multilinear mapping that takes in sequences of operations at different times and outputs a final state conditioned on that sequence. But the more intuitive sense of what it is it's a depiction of all the uncontrollable system environment dynamics in a way which partitions out the controllable experimenter chosen operations. And so what might happen is, or one way to think about this, is that at each point in time, the state is coming out of the process, being manipulated by your operation, and then being fed back into the process to then participate in the dynamics. And the way that you manipulate the system is going to determine how the environment responds to it. So if I kind of zoom into one of these steps, then this is exactly the reduced dynamics as described by a CPTP map. And so I could feed in a state, and then what I get out is going to be an output state, which depends on what came in. But if I zoom out to incorporate a couple of different times, then what we might find is that my action at this point, this A naught, then unlocks some degrees of freedom or makes some transformation on the environment as mediated by this unitary, and then is carried forward in a memory. And then at the next point in time, I feed in a state. And what comes out is not just going to depend now on what came in, but it's going to depend on the operation that I applied at this earlier time. And so this is a sort of quintessentially non-Markovian process because the statistics, the future statistics is updated not only depending on the input state, but it depends on other things that happened in the history. So what we're looking at here, what we're trying to describe here is a stochastic process where we propagate the state along in a way where we're cognizant of how the control operations affect it and cognizant of how the environment is affecting it. So in a certain sense, these control operations are observables of the process. They allow you to determine things about the process. And I just want to emphasize, so that this process is, it's sort of like an underlying ontological entity, which we then have some sort of control over, or we can probe. And the sorts of control operations are completely determinable by the experimenter. So they might be unitary transformations, they might be noise channels, or they might in full generality be quantum instruments. So if you're not familiar with the phrase quantum instruments, this is just a generalization of measurements to incorporate a post-measurement state. So imagine applying a weak measurement to a system, obtaining some outcome, and then having a post-measurement state. And you could imagine that if you applied a sequence of instruments to a system across this time, what you would get out is a joint probability distribution describing the different outputs at different times conditioned on the sequence of instruments that you chose. And so this is identical to the case where you have a quantum many-body state. You pick some basis in which to measure it. You obtain some output distribution conditioned on the basis that you choose. And so what this process tensor does is it formally generalizes the notion of a classical stochastic process to the quantum setting in exactly the same way that, say, a density matrix generalizes the notion of a probability distribution to the quantum setting. And this mapping, this multi-time process, comes equipped with its own generalization of the Choi-Jamikowski isomorphism, which mathematically says that if you swap in one half of a maximally entangled state at each point in time, and then rearrange that state at the end, this n-partite, or this multipartite state, is element by element identical to the quantum process. So marginals are the same, you get the same average initial state, and the corresponding marginals for the future are the same as the average dynamics described by these CPTP maps. But in particular, what this does is it maps temporal correlations, or possible temporal correlations that are mediated by the environment, onto spatial correlations of this state. And so we can use our usual quantum information toolkit to then probe properties of the process. So in my title, I use this term many-time physics, and this is specifically what we mean by it, which is that every multi-time process can be associated with some quantum many-body state. So if a system interacts with a complex environment, that can generate temporal correlations in a non-Markovian process mapped onto spatial ones, which we can then associate with that state. Sequences of operations constitute observables, so like a measurement on that state. And so we can use all of our understanding of many-body physics to now understand this similar concept of many-time physics with some added structure. So what's kind of missing, and what's been the focus of my research, has been to fully probe or to fully study these correlations in a practical setting. And this has applications not just to, say, the development of fault-tolerant quantum technologies, but also to the broad understanding of extracting these structures and what these structures can look like. So that's it for the background. To kind of launch into my work, I guess feeding off this motivation, what we've done is we've developed a way to reconstruct these process tensors. So a formal generalization of quantum process tomography to the multi-time setting. And so in the first instance, what we want to be able to do is we want to be able to reconstruct these multilinear maps. So we want a way to take in sequences of arbitrary operations in an experimental setting and to output a final state, which is conditioned on that arbitrary sequence. So since this is a linear operator, it's naturally uniquely defined by its input-output relations on a complete basis. So if I want to find a basis for this sequence, it suffices to pick a time-local basis of operations for each of these arbitrary operations here. And so to reconstruct this operator, it suffices to measure the final state of the system conditioned on all combinations of basis elements in position one, as well as all combinations in position two, all the way up to all combinations in position k. And then if you trace over all this input information, what you're left with is an expression for this final state, rho A, in terms of some known expansion coefficients and some measured basis states. So we developed this protocol, and then we tested it out in a variety of different settings on IBM quantum devices. And this expression here gives rise to, I think, a natural figure of merit as to the quality of the characterization, which we call reconstruction fidelity. And it essentially says that you can make a prediction for an arbitrary process. You can then go away to the quantum computer, run that arbitrary process, and then compare how close your prediction is to the measurement. So this set of results here kind of summarizes that, where each data point is the closeness of the final state in terms of the prediction to what was actually observed. And in orange here, we have the median reconstruction fidelities being about 0.999. So well within shot noise, or indicating that we have a high quality kind of predictive characterization. But what we want to do in particular is we want to be able to reconstruct the choice state. So we want to be able to reconstruct this many body representation of a process tensor. And so building off what I said before, you get this connection between a model of a process and reality by essentially employing this. This is a generalization of Born's rule, which says that some output statistics observed at the end of a circuit is obtained by projecting this choice state operator onto the sequence of operations that you're concerned with. And so what we can do is we can find, we developed a maximum likelihood method, which finds the physical process tensor, which is as consistent as possible with the experimental data. So what I mean by physical here is that it should be positive, positive semi-definite, and it should also be causal in that any future choice of operations shouldn't affect past statistics. So we developed some algorithms to provide a guaranteed reconstruction of these non-Markovian processes, which comes with convergence guarantees, and allows you to reconstruct this many-body representation of a stochastic process. So with this in mind, what you'd like to do, or hopefully have convinced you or shown you that what we obtain is a high quality characterization. And so we can look at extracting properties of different processes. So to this effect, we want to reconstruct the choice state of different multi-time processes in interesting settings. And one interesting setting is just the naturally occurring noisy dynamics on these quantum devices. So we developed a protocol by which you can use an ancilla qubit to probe this system here across a number of times, and looked at, for example, the two map. So for a seven-step process, we can look at the two map marginals of that process, so the correlations between the different dynamical maps at different times. And over on the left here, we have the total non-Markovianity, so indicating that there are correlations between all of these different points in time. But interestingly, we also see that there's some non-zero negativity which persists, indicating that it's not just these aren't just classical correlations that kind of persist across time. They're mediated by a genuinely complex environment. We can also extract information, for example, like the probabilities of different correlated Pauli errors occurring, so like a ZZ or an XX, an XZZX. And this has the practical kind of application that you could feed this forward then into error mitigation or error correction protocols. And this table just kind of indicates a bunch of different dynamical setups in which we can really get into the minutiae of what this memory looks like and how it kind of behaves depending on what you're doing to that nearby environment. Cool. So we're on this kind of this stream of you want to be able to characterize in a predictive way and with like a sense of guarantees, and you want to be able to extract processes, properties of these processes to see how these correlations can be structured. What we can also do, or what we can also look at doing, is manipulating these processes by using a solid understanding of the underlying dynamics. So if I have some kind of a process tensor representation, then I apply, or I can project that using my knowledge of it onto some sequence of intermediate operations which occur at these different times. And then I'll necessarily know what the conditional process is, so what the reduced process is conditioned on these operations. And so you can then kind of go to your classical computer with understanding of the characterization and look at how you might manipulate the process and find the optimal operations which then manipulate this. And so one application that you could envisage here is to say, try to transform this noisy process into something which resembles just an identity channel, so a clean identity channel. But this is also generalizable to manipulating any sorts of properties of the state. So here's a set of example results also implemented on an IBM quantum device, where each data point constitutes a state preparation experiment. So we're trying to just prepare some random states and compare how well the machine fidelity is to a noise-aware compilation using this approach. So each data point here, the x-axis is the fidelity with which the machine is able to prepare these random states. And the y-axis is, once we know what the process looks like, how can we apply some operations to circumvent these correlated errors? And so what we're able to do is we're able to push the sort of default fidelity up from about 0.82 to 0.93. And the delineation between these three different sets of data, which are in blue, orange, and green, These are, I won't go into too much detail, but these are just essentially if you account for single time Markovian dynamics versus two time versus multi-time kind of correlations. So this sort of shows that these are genuinely multi-time correlations which are affecting the process. You can also look at more general things, like, for example, controlling the past-future entanglement, so the temporal entanglement of these different processes. So to this effect, this example experiment that I've shown here is a three-step process where we're engineering some system-environment interaction and then projecting an intermediate operation onto some parameterized unitary. And we can then compute what the past-future entanglement is conditioned on some choice of unitary operation. And as we vary this from identity to Y to Z to X, you can see that the conditional entanglement can be either maximized or minimized, showing how the complexity of the process might be varied just based on user control and a sort of user understanding of this underlying process. Cool. So to kind of proceed along in terms of some applications of or envisaged applications of this method, what we've recently shown is in this reference here is that the sampling complexity of open quantum systems can be beyond anything which is classically simulable. So in particular, what this means is that like a good use of your quantum computer might be to simulate open quantum dynamics, and that even on a single qubit, this might be something which gives you quantum advantage. So this experiment isn't exactly this, but it's sort of a step towards this, where we consider a single qubit as part of a spin chain, just down here, a four qubit spin chain. We again have our ancilla to sort of probe it, and we consider this over a really large number of time steps. So this is a 20-step process and the dynamics are kind of repeated. And what we're able to do is we're able to, in this instance, look at a series of randomized instruments. So these random instruments of the process generate these, again, these joint probability distributions across time. And what we aim to do is to learn these distributions with the hope that at some point we might be learning complex distributions, not on anytime soon on these quantum devices, but and so what we have here is we have a characterization of a matrix product operator representation of this multi-time process. And then we're essentially just looking at how well we can reconstruct these marginal distributions across time. These marginal distributions across time, which for which each data point is a random sequence of instruments and the classical outputs of these instruments. And we can do this to a pretty high fidelity. So this kind of gives a sense of a technique in a way that you can extract information about these sorts of multi-time correlations and these interesting joint distributions. So, and you can also look at things like properties of the state and things like properties of the process marginals to see how the kind of the complexity of the the complexity of the process evolves with time. And we see that as you might expect that it kind of diminishes as you increase time. So just the last couple of points that I want to bring up. First is how we can apply classical shadows to do interesting things and look at space-time correlations. So classical shadows, to those who aren't familiar, it's essentially a way in which you can extract a large number of properties from a quantum state by performing randomized measurements. And the number of measurements required essentially grows non-extensively or only logarithmically with the size of the system, so long as you're not increasing the locality of the observables that you're interested in. Now, in particular, when we generalize this to the temporal setting, what's interesting about it is that the sort of free observable, so the free operation that you get, is a maximally depolarizing channel. So throw the state away and then re-prepare a maximally mixed state. And this operation is a causal break because it erases the whole history of what might happen, so that there's no sort of past-future independence at a system level. So what this allows you to do is to kind of causally test where different non-Markovian correlations come from, or like to test you know, if you erase this particular system, do I still have temporal correlations on another system? So this, in a practical sense, maybe answers the question of, if I detect non-Markovianity, does it come from a nearby qubit or does it come from an inaccessible bath? So this simulation here is considering a lattice of mutually interacting qubits, which you might detect to be non-Markovian, as well as an inaccessible environment defect. And once you do this, this filtering out of crosstalk using this shadow method, then what's left is that you can kind of triangulate the qubits that are directly interacting with this environment. And so we can kind of geometrically look for non-Markovian defects using an efficient method. And you can also look at space-time correlations, which I won't get into too much, but essentially if information travels, say, from this qubit to 2 to an environment defect, and then from that defect to a second qubit, then this generates correlations between the first map on the first qubit with the second map on the second qubit. And so we can again look at which qubits here have a non-zero mutual information at different points in space and time, and therefore consequently, which qubits share the same kind of common bath. So this identifies which qubits have the same common cause variable in their environment. And finally, not to go into too much detail on this, but everything so far has kind of really been focused on control, and has control elevated to a sort of like a preferred frame of reference where we, the user, have perfect control and we're able to probe these processes and understand these system environment dynamics. But if we want to put control at the same level of unknown as the environment, then we can expand our model and come up with essentially this is a near universal framework for quantum noise, where we're modeling not just possible system environment interactions, but for the possibility that we might have imperfect gates, we might have correlations in our gates, and our gates themselves might directly spill over to the environment. So we can look at these models and characterize them we want to be able to do this in a fairly efficient way. So we can look at these models and we can characterize them by modeling them with tensor network methods. So again, don't want to go into this too much, but we can really make these methods scalable if the noise is not too sparse. Sorry, if the noise is reasonably sparse, we can make these methods scalable. And we can do things like not just learn the underlying stochastic process, but we can learn errors that occur within the probes. And so this control then gets put on the same sort of unknown non-preferential footing as the background process. So I just want to conclude on some rough future directions and some interesting problems that I think exist from here on. So in particular, I've sort of emphasized the interestingness of the possible interestingness of these temporal structures. And I think there's a lot of scope for which you could look for interesting quantum processes by sourcing inspiration from many body states. So in particular, looking for things like temporal phase transitions. And here's a couple of ideas of how a temporal phase transition might look like. So you might have a system which interacts with an environment via some parameterized Hamiltonian. And you might see that as you vary the order parameter in this Hamiltonian, that you observe a phase transition in the structure of the temporal correlations among the process. And this would generalize, for example, dynamical phase transitions. Another thing that you might think about along these lines is to repeat interactions and see how the memory structure scales as a function of repeated system environment interactions. So going maybe from a nice coherent system to something which is a bit more chaotic. And finally, how you might look at the response of the process to modified control operations. So this would provide a different avenue to look at things like measurement-induced phase transitions, where you maybe see how the process responds to ramping up the probability of different errors. Along these lines as well, I think what would be a really interesting kind of next avenue is to look at like a renormalization group perspective on these structures. And in particular, you know, a concern that some people have with the development of fault-tolerant quantum computers is the possibility that errors might emerge at scale in a way that we don't quite understand. And so I think this is a good motivation for thinking about observing the temporal structure of these processes at different scales. So we could imagine having like a tree tensor network representation of these processes that goes all the way from looking at dynamics at the pulse level to then the physical level and then ultimately the logical level. To really kind of understand these processes with the aim that we can use these ideas to better control them. Also, as I kind of discussed before, these processes, these multi-time stochastic processes, can exhibit complexity. And there's been a lot of really interesting recent results in learning theory for extracting properties of, say, quantum states or quantum processes. So quantum data fed into classical machine learning algorithms and then extracting properties of that state, which you would otherwise be unable to predict. Now, as it turns out, two-time sampling is not necessarily enough to achieve this kind of classical intractability. So it's not necessarily enough to just look at an open quantum system and say, for example, reconstruct its master equation. Some of this complexity comes from the multi-time correlations. And so I think it would be a fairly straightforward idea to readily generalize these results in learning theory so that you could, say, have a quantum computer which simulates an open system, or maybe have a quantum sensor interacting with an interesting environment, which you could then use these techniques to extract information from and then feed that kind of quantum data to reconstruct properties of the process, which would be otherwise classically intractable. And this I think is an interesting avenue to possible quantum advantage. And finally, I'm interested in continuing this work to think about how to tame correlated noise. So correlated noise is particularly an issue for quantum computers, not just because it introduces more noise into a quantum circuit, but it also kind of violates some of these models assumed by error correction codes. And you can show that the effectiveness or the distance required from an error correction code becomes reduced in the presence of correlated errors. And so I think there's a lot of room for using these sort of very bespoke characterization techniques to look at noise and look at how this might feed into error suppression, error mitigation, and error correction. So in conclusion, hopefully have shown you or convinced you that you can find some rich, interesting structures in many time physics, which is commensurate with many body physics. And what we've done over the past few years is develop process tensor tomography, which is a generalization of quantum process tomography to the multi-time setting. And this allows you to study and capture really in full generality different spatio-temporal correlations in open quantum dynamics and possibly beyond. So here are a few references if you would like to check out any of these. Otherwise, I'm happy to take any questions.
Okay, fantastic. Let's thank Gregory for a nice talk. And at this point, just please go ahead and raise your hand. We'll go in order for the questions. I think Ningping, you were the first. Go ahead, please.
Okay. Thank you for the talk. It's very interesting. Can you go to the page 4 of your slides?
Yeah. Trouble with so many animations.
So this tensor structure way of representing a Markovian process, why I think you mentioned the epsilon or the U's are CPTP maps. Is there any reason why you chose CPTP maps? Because if you have the correlation, if you are not separable from your environment, then the process describing the evolution won't be CPTP, right?
Yeah, no, so this is a good point and something I maybe didn't emphasize enough at the time. So if you have initial system environment correlations, then you can't represent the future dynamics or the future reduced dynamics with a completely positive map.
Yes.
So this is one of the major breakdowns of the dynamical map approach to describing, say, non-Markovian dynamics. Mm-hmm. So, famously, this is the leads to the breakdown of CP divisibility as a witness of non-Markovianity. When I say that these on average are CPTP maps, if you marginalize the initial state, so if you fully throw away or marginalize over this input leg, this output leg here, then that destroys any possible initial correlations and gives you the marginal CPTP map, supposing that you had, say, measured this initial state, thrown away the outcome, and then looked at the future dynamics. Okay. So if you incorporate these correlations, the future dynamics is not CP. But the overall process tensor is CP. But if you if you marginalize over that initial state, then you get a future map, which is CPTP.
Okay. So is this tensor structure be able to characterize all the non-Markovian processes? Or like it's the I think you'll partly answer the question is like, is there any limitation of using this framework to describe non-Markovian processes?
No. So in terms of fully general non-Markovian open processes, this process tensor is able to describe it. And in fact, this agrees with the classical definition of a stochastic process in the kind of limit, in the classical limit. And so you can describe any arbitrary open systems using this framework. So it doesn't assume anything about the structure of these interactions between the system and the environment. Where you might like to go beyond and where what this framework is not able to describe are these sorts of acausal quantum structures. So for that, you need something like a process matrix where you might have, say, superpositions of different causal orders. But that sort of goes beyond the open system kind of setting. Another, I guess it's also good to maybe point out some of the model limitations of this process tensor. So it is assuming that you have perfect control. And we've looked at how you can kind of circumvent this and simultaneously characterize the control. But that's a big assumption of the framework. But in a theoretical sense, it's completely able to describe any non-Markovian processes.
Okay. Can you go to the page 11? Yeah, this is going to be a quick question. So on the picture of the right hand side, you have like the arrows with like the lines with arrows. I assume that's the you are saying okay, one maybe the information flow from one qubit to another. How do you mathematically characterize the direction of how your information flows?
So I might not have given this the attention that it deserves. So the number isn't the information flow isn't direct information flow from one qubit to another. It's indirect information flow from, say, this qubit to its non-Markovian environment to the second qubit. And so what these numbers compute is if you take the CPTP map of qubit one from time one to zero and the CPTP map from qubit two from time two to one, what this number is showing is the mutual information between those two maps as described under this process tensor. So that's where the direction comes from, is it's the correlation between time two on this qubit with time one on this qubit in terms of those dynamics.
All right, thank you.
Okay, I think Debbie is next.
Thank you. So I also like this, first of all, a comment, and then there's a question. Do you mind going back to page 4?
Yeah.
The quick comment is that I think these process tensors have different names before. I believe Tribella and company called these quantum comms, and Gus Gutowski and John Watchers called these quantum strategies.
Yeah, so the ideas have, I think they've appeared in a lot of different contexts, and even mathematically, a lot of these ideas are fairly identical. I think they've just emerged in different contexts, so specifically here in non-Markovian processes, but Tirabella's quantum combs is the earliest idea, the earliest emergence of these ideas. That I know of, but they are mathematically very similar.
Right. then the question is, for example, if I specify some form of input-output characteristics of the whole process, but do not say how many times, how many teeth the comb has in the language. Is there a way to find out a lower bound on how many times time step there are in the process?
So if you specify a number of times and you specify the correlations between those times, I'm not sure I understand the question.
Okay, so it ties back to the situation when we try to discriminate between two possible such process tensors, like in the discrimination task. Suppose I have for example, if I have, if there are two tensors that I can discriminate, is there a way to verify how many steps will be needed to perform this discrimination?
Right. I think this is an interesting question. So first and foremost, like a quantum stochastic process is defined across a preset number of times. So you're taking this continuous window and then you're discretizing it into a number of times. And it doesn't necessarily tell you about the underlying dynamics between those times. So you've only got the times on which you're probing. So you have this kind of, you can imagine that you have this underlying infinite step process from one time to another, and that you're looking at the case in which you've projected every leg of that process onto the identity operation, except for a few which you're looking at. And so if you wanted to discriminate two processes, you can always fine grain. So if you had, say, two processes which looked the same, at a very coarse level, so say you looked at only like three times and the statistics were the same, they might still have very different underlying properties between those times, for which you would then need to fine grain the process and look at possibly the higher order correlations or the differences in dynamics which occur between those two times. So you can get very different dynamics. You know, and this is true of like CPTP maps and you know, any kind of steam spring dilation. You can get very different dynamics leading to identical processes across a number of times. But if you fine grain the times, you should always be able to discriminate the processes at some point in that fine graining. Does that answer the question?
Yes. We just happened to have a previous example in which you're not allowed to, it's not a continuous process, it's a discrete process. And adaptation actually helps, and you can prove certain advantage out of specifically adapting taking the output of one black box use and use it as an input to the second use to beat the actual bound of doing the discrimination in a parallel manner.
All right. I'd be really interested in hearing more about that.
And there was an open problem at the time that we hope to construct an example so that you need so many rounds of adaptation in order to do the discrimination optimally, but we cannot prove it. But I also see that this is very related to, say, sensing and other possible things that people want to do in physics.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's a lot of really practical applications to these studies of these open quantum systems. But yeah, I'd be interested in hearing more about that.
Yeah, thanks.